Welcome to,
or welcome back to, Dark Room Reviews.
My name is Ginger.
And I'm Matt.
This week we're going to be finishing up our Conjuring Universe series, and we're going to be diving right into
The Conjuring 3.
The Devil Made Me Do It.
I figured I'd just let you roll that off. I didn't want to have to parallel that.
Yeah, it's too much.
We got The Conjuring 3 in sync.
So like we said, this is our final installment of the Conjuring Universe series, and as you might be wondering, how does this movie compare to all the others? Well, there's a lot to talk about.
So let's dive right in.
So, you might be asking, who are we? Well, my name is Ginger. And I'm a full-time student.
There we go.
And a film critic by nighttime every 2 weeks. So there you go. That's pretty much it. No, normally I'm an airline pilot, but of course, due to the whole pandemic thing, we're not working right now. And yeah, so this is what we're doing for now. I'm the one who loves the movies and generally, like, you know, thinks they're better than my better half over here.
Sometimes. Depends. Sometimes. Although it's weird. We swapped for a little while and now I'm back to hating most things.
Yeah, I think
the world's back in order. We're getting back into normal times. We're getting there, guys.
Right.
And in case you don't know, I'm Matt. Mm-hmm. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
What's up?
another pandemic podcast.
Yeah.
Unlike Ginger, I did not first jump into the aviation industry. I decided to be unemployed after I lost my job in LA. Just kidding. I left. It was terrible. But I did work as a music assistant slash whatever runner, whatever crap job they have you do over there in Los Angeles for a film music TV series. And that was fun as that was. It made me get an inside look on all things horror and film and maybe have a bit of a grudge against them. We don't know.
We know.
You know my thoughts on things.
Yes.
So I guess that means the great debate lives on. So The Conjuring 3, bam, 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 bam,
bam, bam, bam,
new movie.
New movie.
And we finally get to complete our universe, guys.
Yeah.
I'm going to spoil it a little bit by saying I'm pleasantly surprised in the direction they went.
Yes.
You'll hear our full thoughts. But before we get going, this movie, The Conjuring 3, full title, The Devil Made Me Do It, was released on June 4th, 2021, just about a week and a bit ago now.
Yeah, brand new movie.
Brand new. It was directed by Michael Chaves. Chaves?
Chaves? Chaves? Chaves? I don't know.
Chaves?
Sure.
That guy. And produced by James Wan. Yes, he still had a hand in The Conjuring universe.
Mm-hmm.
Starring our old favorites, Vera Farmiga and Patrick Wilson as Lorraine and Ed Warren.
Mm-hmm.
We also have Rory O'Connor as Arnie.
I don't really know how to pronounce Rory O'Connor.
Rory?
It's Irish, so I'm sorry to the Irish. But sometimes you guys have a really interesting spelling for your first names, so I'm not sure.
Well,
and until I hear it, I don't know exactly how it's supposed to be pronounced, so there we go.
I'm going to go with Rory.
Mm-hmm.
Rory?
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 I don't know.
That guy. And he plays Arnie Cheyenne Johnson. Sorry, I think I mispronounced it the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy is the real character of real life that we are going to be focusing on in this movie.
Yep.
We also have Sarah Catherine Hook as Debbie Glatzel, John Noble as Father Kastner, and finally Eugene Beaudurand as the occultist.
Yeah, she doesn't... I was looking up...
Did I say Eugene or did I say Eugenie?
Eugenie.
Let me make sure I got that right.
So she didn't actually have a name in the credits, just the occultist. So yeah,
we'll get into that.
And that tracks. That makes sense for how what her character is.
Yeah.
Yep.
They don't really explain it. They don't necessarily have to.
I don't even think she. Yeah. I don't know if she briefly has a name. Doesn't. It doesn't really matter. It's good. I like it.
So let's jump into the movie, shall we? So we jumped up to the front of the house. And it's, you know, typical haunting shit, exorcism. There's claw marks. There's things trashed all over the place. They actually do a really good job in this opening scene to really make it look very similar to The Conjuring. I found that they got, like, a lot of the grayscale effects were really similar. Mm. Almost that, like, everything has kind of a tinge of dark gray to it, like they did towards the end of The Conjuring.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought it was good.
So my favorite part about the opening scene wasn't just that, wasn't just the callback to the original Conjuring movie. For me, it was the exterior shot. It was The Exorcist, basically.
Oh, yeah, when they had that guy, yeah.
Yeah, basically they had the priest show up and listen, if anybody's a fan of The Exorcist, you know the scene I'm talking about. It's the scene in The Exorcist where the priest shows up, he's standing outside the house, and he's looking up in there because he knows the fucking girl is possessed by the devil. And it's the shot, and the creepy, like, Exorcist music is playing in the background. Like, yeah. It's the quintessential Exorcist shot.
Quick aside, they did actually get the same guy for music as they did for The Conjuring 2 and Annabelle, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, which is good.
Joseph, I'm going to blank in his last name. It's almost like Bathsheba, which is kind of funny. It's like Bashad or something.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyways, really like his music. Did a great job with the score on this one, too.
But yeah, so anybody who is a classic horror fan, what did you think? I thought that was intentional. I don't think that you could set up that shot not knowing. I don't think you could
just set up that shot not knowing.
Yeah, like it looked exactly like it.
And it had like the exact same pan, exact same wide angle.
Yeah,
like,
it was really well done.
It wasn't trying to rip it off, but it was done as like almost like an homage.
It was an homage for sure, because they were about to start an exorcism
on the kid who's possessed.
Exactly. I thought it was perfect.
I just want to mention the 10 to 10 makeup and hair person that did the Vera Farmiga's hair.
Yes.
It's like...
It's so good.
It's so good.
Well, because this bridges into... This is leaving the late 70s going into the early 80s for the real life story.
And this is actually where the Warrens started to get a lot more popular.
Yes.
And Lorraine was actually very trendy for her time in terms of like hairstyles.
Yeah, like she's certainly wearing outfits that are trendy for the time, late 70s, early 80s, but she is rocking some big hair in this. Oh, and it's true, they have these old pictures of Lorraine, and they did such a good job of making her look like old Lorraine.
And I think that this is probably the better ones. I'm not saying they ever did a bad job with it, but this was the best one. The best one, I think.
Yeah. The only one that doesn't look so much like their character is, I find, the difference between Patrick Wilson, the actor who plays Ed, and the real Ed Warren. I just find that by the time Ed Warren was getting old, he was looking really old.
Yeah.
And Patrick Wilson he's a good-looking man. So he is older, but he is still looking really good.
Quick aside, though, it's funny because every time, like, I know Patrick Wilson's been playing this character for a while.
Forever.
But unfortunately, he also got cast in Insidious.
No, and every time you see
and
it,
every
you're
time
like...
you're like, wait, he's in another movie, but this time he's not the ghost hunter; he's being possessed.
Yeah,
it always confuses me for a half second.
I know,
but anyways,
he's certainly being typecast. Let's put it that way.
Yeah,
yeah,
but yeah, no, I agree. I think that they kind of nailed it with Vera Farmiga.
Really, really good, and just the general. The whole aesthetic of everybody's clothing, I actually find that they really nailed it in this one. So, okay, you guys have probably, if you've listened to any of our episodes, you know that I really don't like this new style that's happening right now. People love putting movies set in the 80s right now. And you know what? Look. You want to set a movie in the 80s? Go right ahead. Be my guest. Set a movie in the 80s. I don't care. It's fine.
But get it right.
Get it right.
Don't make it look like it's now trying to be 80s. Hipstery 80s.
Yeah, it's all... Well,
and this is why I don't care for Gen Z fashion as much. Ugh. Because it's like, we're trying to take the best of the 80s and 90s and make it our own. But no, you're just copying the 90s and it looks equally as ugly now as it did in the 90s.
Yeah, you'll regret it, trust me. As somebody who wore that fashion when it was popular the first time, will regret it.
What was the movie that we didn't see it, but we saw a ton of trailers for it? 1984, Wonder Woman.
Wonder Woman, yeah.
Yeah, they had a couple scenes where they're like going to parties and shit, and it's like,
she looks
that's okay. So trendy. Like that, nothing would be that form fitting like that.
No, it's way too beautiful. It's like they got.
They got the color pattern.
Yeah,
right.
It's stuff that would be popular today because it's using 80s as like an inspiration. But that's not what really the 80s outfits look like. Because trust me, they were ugly. And anybody who doesn't think that, you're crazy.
Yeah.
Like, you are crazy if you can't look back at that era, like, honestly, and say, like, that shit was ugly.
It's true.
Yeah. So anyways, I really liked this particular Conjuring movie because, like I said, it's bridging from late 70s into early 80s, and I think they nail it. Like,
and even across the board for the rest of the characters, I think they do a really good job.
Yeah. It has kind of that ugly sort of look, and the hair is getting into that very not quite 80s look yet, but it's leaving the 70s. It's great. Yeah. They did a really good job. Oh, and the music was fantastic. Not just the original score.
Well, because they got the same guy. Well, and I feel like this guy did a lot better job. And I think James Wan had a lot to do with this, too. Because they made really smart choices of when to use source music, which is where it's, like, coming from a radio. Yeah. Or when they use, like, popular songs of the time.
Yeah.
Versus written score.
And all of the popular songs from the time are actually popular songs from the time.
And they actually fit the scene. I really like
that. Yeah, they fit the scene really well.
We'll mention some of those as we get to those scenes, but let's cue some nighttime haunting stuff, shall we, in this opening scene?
Of course.
Of course. What horror movie doesn't start with nighttime haunting? Again, typical Conjuring fashion, they kind of jump into it right away.
That's always the Conjuring. That's how they do it.
So you don't know what's going on. You're just in this family. Walls are banging. Hands on, like, the shower rails. I was like, this actually was a bit of a callback. This kid kind of gets chased into the bathroom.
Yeah.
And it kind of has, like, bathtub lady from The Shining callbacks.
It does. It has little moments. Again, where you're thinking, like, okay, it's nice, though, that the people that are making this movie obviously like other classic horror movies.
Yeah.
Right? They're trying really hard to appeal to a certain crowd.
Not to copy it, but almost, like, you know, tip their hat off at
them. Yeah. It's, like, it's a nice little, like, hey, we like your movie, but we're not copying it. And it's true. It's not a direct copy.
Yeah. So now we have, like, the blood in the shower. So essentially all we know right now is there's a kid that's essentially being targeted out of this family, and he's basically going to have an exorcism performed on him.
Yeah, he's a 10-year-old little kid or something.
And
10 or 12.
You can tell that destruction has just been going through the house. There's, like, ripped wallpaper, dents in the wall, furniture all over the place, broken shit.
Yeah, they finally get the kid downstairs on the dining room table where the whole exorcism really takes place. It's a pretty quick scene. I like the pacing of it. It doesn't linger too long.
Yeah, I actually do like the way they do Lorraine's visions.
Yes, and Lorraine is having visions at the same time. And while this whole thing is happening, the kid is, unlike a typical exorcist movie, they're doing really good body contortionist work.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually read an article just before this came out about the woman who did most of the work for this movie.
Yeah, you told me about that. Wasn't it a Cirque du Soleil performer?
Yes, and I tried to find it. Of course, I can't find it credited. I can't find her credited anywhere.
Yeah.
But she is a Cirque du Soleil performer, and she's usually performing in Las Vegas. She does the O show pretty regularly, and she is a body contortionist. And she was the one who did a lot of the body double shots for this particular scene.
Yeah.
So that's why the scene looks so great, because it's not CGI.
Yeah.
It's a real contortionist. Like, really moving her body like that. And she's a very small woman, so it does actually
look like she's a child.
Yeah. She's a pretty tiny woman. I saw her, like, her in pictures and stuff. It's pretty, she's pretty amazing. So I thought, like, really cool scene. So essentially what happens is that, running parallel to this, Lorraine is having her visions.
Yeah, and she basically finds out that they need to do the exorcism now. So they rush over, they do the exorcism on the kid.
Yeah.
And shit starts going crazy. They have to do it. This is where it gets a little cinematic for my taste.
Yep, but not so much.
Not
they rein
so
it
much.
In.
They do rein it in. It's a very quick scene. And basically the most important thing here is the brother of this kid.
No, not the brother.
Not the brother?
It's the he's dating the little kid's sister.
Oh,
Debbie
Glatzel is
the little kid's sister.
Other
He's
way around.
Dating Debbie.
Arnie. Yep.
Is dating Debbie.
There we go.
Now we have to know this because this is real life. Like, all these people are still alive. Like, this is their life.
Yeah. So Arnie decides that, well, doesn't decide. He just shouts out at the kid saying, "I'm gonna swap with you."
Yeah.
And essentially you get this whole idea that the kid was targeted. That's what Lorraine has kind of said, is that the young kid was targeted and it basically has latched on to the kid. So Arnie decides to say that he's going to now swap with the kid.
Yep.
And everything kind of calms down, and you see, like, that it's calm down.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where the actual intertitles start for the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So this is kind of like a bit of a preamble for you guys.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially what we know is Arnie, the main character of the story, and also, you know, the first character you see in the movie,
yeah,
is the one that we're focusing on. So for those of you that don't know, I'm just going to give a bit of the backstory of the real story.
Mm-hmm.
Arnie was... Not convicted. He was charged with murder.
Yeah, he was convicted for manslaughter.
But he was convicted for manslaughter.
Yeah.
But he was charged with murder of this guy in this town.
Mm-hmm.
And his main grounds for his defense was plea not guilty by demonic possession.
Yeah. It's the first time that was a properly entered plea in the United States.
Yeah.
By demonic possession.
Once or twice, I think, in the UK.
Yep.
At the time.
Yep.
And this was the first case of it happening in the States.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's what this movie follows, is the before, during, and after.
Yeah.
Of kind of what it is. They don't really... So, for those of you that maybe just want our initial thoughts before diving into the scene by scene, if you're interested to see it and you want to stop here before diving full into our review... Keep in mind, it's not like The Exorcism of Emily Rose.
No, it's not a courtroom
movie. It's not
movie.
A courtroom. It's not an episode of Law and Order.
No, and I like that. I actually like that. It's not boring because of it. And it's not too much like...
cutaway side by side. So
not too much flashback.
There's a lot of parallel stories that are kind of happening at... You're almost watching it as it's happening.
Yeah, it's really well done.
But there are some other storylines that kind of happen at the same time that are maybe not entirely true. We'll get to those. There's a bit of extra storyline that kind of adds for Hollywood magic.
Yeah,
so,
of course.
It's not just a straight, this is what's happening, similar to The Conjuring.
Mm-hmm.
It does have some other through lines. So if you think that's something you might be interested in,
mm-hmm.
check it out. But I will say it's less of a haunting paranormal movie as it is a psychological haunting thriller horror.
Yeah, which is probably why we like it the most.
We're more fans of the psychological horror where,
yeah.
like, it's not scary because they're cutting people up, like...
Yeah.
It can be gruesome. I mean, if you watch Grey's Anatomy,
yeah,
it's fine.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, I like that they take that in terms of like you don't know what's happening. There's this other thing going on, but you don't know what's happening on this side because now you're on this other storyline, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So we'll get into that. So essentially, now all we know is that Arnie has officially swapped places with the kid, which is his girlfriend's brother.
Yes.
Making sure I get that right.
Yeah. Arnie is not related to the little kid.
Yeah.
He is dating the sister of the little kid, Debbie Glotzel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now we jump ahead.
Mm-hmm.
We're now into, you know, the now present day after this event. We don't know how long it's been, but at least
It's been a short amount of time. The family is basically just glad to be getting back to normal because basically, as far as they know, the whole exorcism thing has worked. Now... The Warrens know otherwise, specifically Ed Warren knows otherwise.
Yes.
But the family is just kind of like getting back to normal. So now what happens right after the exorcism is that all you know is that this Arnie guy has probably been possessed, but he's not necessarily showing outward signs.
Yep.
And then Ed has a heart attack right there on the scene.
Yeah.
Yep. And he's taken to the hospital, rushed to the hospital, and he undergoes surgery right away. So he's getting, like, a stent put in and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And because of this, like, because of Lorraine, her character, she's all, like, wrapped up in what's happening with Ed. And all she knows is that the family is okay. So she's not really thinking about it. But as soon as Ed comes to, he tells Lorraine what he witnessed, which is...
He witnessed the swapping,
yeah,
essentially.
Yeah. Basically the demon or devil or whatever possessing Arnie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is happening slightly later because we get a bit of intro to Arnie at his current residence after this is all unfolded because Ed is still in the hospital.
Yeah.
So you know it's probably at least a few days later.
It's definitely some days like because Ed's been under...
Because now what they're doing is they're getting a party ready.
Yeah.
They're having like a housewarming party. Everyone's kind of going back to normal.
They're just having like a family celebration.
I do love the scares in this part.
Yeah, me too.
Because they're not jump scares.
No.
There's no creepy music and it's all stuff that is... by definition normal.
Yes. Like, I love it.
Like, there's no music. He's just left alone getting stuff in the kitchen, and, like, a cereal box falls.
Yeah, he's like, getting chips and snacks and stuff for the party to bring outside.
And they made an excellent choice to do no score.
Yeah, no score. It's perfectly silent. No score.
And they did. Now, this would be something I wish we could go in theaters for. I'm going to nerd out for just a second.
Okay, here we go.
Oh, don't sound so thrilled.
Okay.
I got to entertain my nerd enthusiasts.
Oh, my God.
Okay, give me like a minute to nerd out.
Sure.
So I do kind of wish we could have seen this in theaters.
Yeah.
Because of the new audio technology, which is Dolby Atmos.
Mm-hmm.
So for those of you that know anything about audio in movie theaters, what I would love to see, like, we actually only have a couple of theaters in Toronto that have Atmos. They're very popular in LA because it's kind of the new standard. For those of you that, this will be a fun fact for those people. If you've ever heard of, like, you know, 10.1 Dolby surround sound or 12.1, 12.2, that's how many speakers or channels that's being run in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have 10.1, the 0.1 is always a subwoofer where you don't get any real sound. It's those, like, thuddy, punchy sounds in the theater. The rumbling in your chairs, that type of thing. And I think the most they had up until Atmos was 12.
Mm-hmm.
12 channels plus one or two subwoofers. And that would correspond to the location of the speakers in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
So if you had 12, they would be situated, you know, mid-center of the screen, mid-left, center-right, left and right, side. Like, you can go crazy.
Yeah.
There was a standard layout for it, I don't remember. Atmos actually created an additional channel which had almost pinhole-type speakers that were behind the screen, similar to IMAX, and also at the top of the theater.
Hmm.
And they were supposed to be for what was known as atmospheric background sounds.
Hmm.
So it's actually, it's supposed to mimic and be really good for horror movies because they would, and for natural sounds, because it would mimic your ear's actual tendency, similar to tinnitus, where you almost have that almost ringing, empty ear sound.
That's cool.
Which is why I would have loved to see how I'm getting back on track here? Is why I would have loved to see this scene in an Atmos theater.
Yeah.
Because they make excellent use of silence, and I'd be curious to know, because every movie now is done with Atmos, so they will usually have at least one release in Atmos and another one in, like, 10.1.
Right.
So that most theaters can at least have a version of it.
Version. Makes sense.
But I would love to see this in Atmos.
Yeah.
Because of the way that the sound would actually be different, and because of the smart choices they made with the score.
Neat.
All right, nerd session is done.
Okay, you know what? Pleasantly surprised by your nerd session. That was informative. Thank you.
You're welcome. And now I'll hand it back over to you.
Okay. So this scene for me, like, the lack of sound was really cool. The lack of score was really cool because it wasn't your typical horror. And I thought the scares were things that could legitimately happen to a person in their home.
Basically, and then they have the one big jump scare after.
Yeah. Basically, he's in the kitchen, like I said. He's getting snacks ready, bringing them outside. And he sees the cereal box, like, over on the counter shifting around. And then it violently gets, like, pulled off the counter and it flings everywhere.
Yep.
Right? And then he walks over to it. And he's...
Then a mouse scuttles out.
Yeah, a mouse scuttles out of the box and you're like, classic. And then his attention gets drawn to this weird hole thing in the wall, which is likely there as remnants from the exorcism that they've only just had probably a week prior. And he's looking into this hole and you're kind of waiting
for... No sound, no nothing.
Yeah, and you're kind of waiting for a shitty jump scare, but it's not really a jump scare, actually.
They pan back out, and then it's similar to Hereditary.
Yeah.
You see the kid then behind him.
Yes.
It's actually the a demonic version of the kid that was originally possessed.
And I really love the styling. So, okay, so The Conjuring has been known to be too cinematic for my liking.
Yeah.
Their demons look too silly.
Mm-hmm.
They look like what a little kid might think of as a demon. Yeah, it's just ridiculous. I don't know. And again, we've said it once, we've said it a thousand times, what your mind creates is way scarier than what they put on a movie screen, right? And this was so cool because this was just the demon-y version of him, just like a dark version of him. I thought that was really freaky because that would really freak you out. Like,
and
if you
only
turned
see
around
it
and saw
for
that.
A split second,
and then,
and then he's on the floor and he's like, what the fuck just happened?
It's great. It's a really good moment, and it's not a jump scare. It's a scare. It's not a jump scare.
But it, and it, It is a bit of a jump scare, but not in the way that it's like...
No, it's not just like loud bang, the phone rings or something. Yeah, I hate those.
So now we cut back. So this movie has a lot of cutting back and forth, which is going to make it a little bit harder to go through. But now we're back to Ed in the hospital. He needed surgery after the exorcism, and then we're back to Arnie. Mm-hmm. So he's doing odd jobs to kind of get himself through, and he's like cutting down a tree, and you're like, oh no,
yeah,
this is not gonna be good.
No.
And the one thing I like about this is they jump into the rain. Like, it's a Conjuring movie, they don't need to do any preamble.
No,
everyone knows that by this point, on the third Conjuring movie, it has to do with horror and haunting.
Yeah.
So when someone gets and like suspended by a tree to cut down a tree with a chainsaw, you know that's not gonna be a good sight.
Yeah. So you can tell that Arnie is like pretty not
on edge.
He's on edge and he's not feeling well at this point. Like, he's really agitated. He's looking really pale. He's sweating. His eyes are really dark. Like, he's just not looking good.
Oh, and a good homage to Hereditary here as well. While he's cutting out of the tree, I don't know if you saw, they did a very quick focus in the house behind him.
Yes.
Where they have, again, the same demon kid.
Yeah, it was really well done.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he kind of goes inside, and the place that he's staying at with his girlfriend, Debbie, is they're getting like room and board for free at this. Looks like kind of like an animal shelter / vet's office, maybe.
Or like a kennel, yeah.
Yeah, like a kennel. They're helping out by, you know. Oh my god. So it happens every time.
Every episode.
But if you just heard that kind of scratching sound in the
we'll
background.
We'll quiet it down. Hang on.
Oh, he's not going to do it now.
Oh, he's out now.
Oh, of course he is. That was our cat.
That was George.
In the litter box.
Taking a giant dump.
Yeah. And he was scratching the side of his box to cover his poo. So.
George makes an appearance once again. That's the main reason you come back here, right?
Mm-hmm. To hear George's thoughts on things.
But yeah, so they're renting this room at what seems to be for free for this guy who has like a kennel or some type of other service.
And they're doing work for him so that they can stay.
And you can tell that like Arnie's trying to take odd jobs. You don't really know their full situation.
No, I like that they don't get into
too much into his life. They more focus just on the story, which is good.
Yeah, I really like that.
But at this point, he's back at the house, this like room and board house, and he is not feeling so hot.
Yeah, and he tells Debbie he's not feeling well, and he just wants to lay down, and she's like, okay. Because, you know, she's concerned. But as he's going into the boarding, like the kennel place, the owner, the guy who runs it, is just this kind of white trash, sleazy looking guy.
Yeah.
He's kind of like, and he's like very hyper, really loud, drinks a shit ton, probably does drugs. I'm sure they're alluding to that.
Yeah.
And basically the guy gets kind of up in Arnie's face, and he's like, oh, can you help me fix my radio?
Yeah, my stereo's busted. Can you help me? Yeah. All these things.
And so our cat is absolutely cracked out right now. He is so cracked. There are definitely ghosts in this room.
He just like looked at every single corner of the room. He knows.
Yeah, he knows. He understands.
Oh, but before this happened, so the guy that they're rooming with helps ask him to kind of fix the stereo, but then this, now we have another cut back to Ed.
Yes.
He's finally awake after surgery, and he goes to Lorraine and is like, you need to get Arnie help.
Yeah.
You need to call the police. I don't care how you get them there.
Yeah,
he's in danger.
There.
He's possessed.
Mm-hmm. So Lorraine does this. She manages to track down the police. And
but after this, now we're back at the Arnie guy's place. They fix the stereo and they're having like a drinking night.
Yep.
Arnie's not feeling it. And you can tell that his mind, they do this almost from Arnie's point of view.
Yeah, they do this really excellent perception thing though, because you can tell that all the stuff that you're seeing is from Arnie's perspective, but you can also tell that it's not actually happening.
Yeah.
They do a really good thing with the color distortion and the way they're filming it. It's very like purples and reds, which is a...
And they almost either hyper focus or just slightly out of focus.
Yeah,
the background, which is really,
really
cool.
Really, really cool. It's a cool effect.
So things are dancing. People are laughing. I think even Debbie is dancing with the other guy.
But in real life, it kind of shows that it sort of like pops out to real life a little bit. So in reality, what's going on is Debbie's just trying to keep the drunk landlord guy at bay. And
in Arnie's mind,
he sees her legitimately interested in him, and he's getting too aggressive with her.
Yeah.
That's not actually happening, by the way. That's just what Arnie sees.
So he goes away into the kennel, I'm pretty sure. He runs away to the kennel. He's kind of freaking out.
Yeah.
He's having a moment.
Yep.
And he sees things chasing after him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not good. He sees this thing that's almost like crawling at him.
Yeah.
In the kennel.
And then it kind of morphs and turns into the guy who owns the whole building.
And you realize that as this guy was supposedly charging at him, Arnie has actually stabbed him.
Yeah.
And he's now dead on the ground.
And he's been stabbed a bunch of times.
And this is the murder in question
of
the real life case.
And this is the murder that actually takes place.
Yeah.
So the next scene that we have is Arnie.
And this was actually the scene that was in a lot of the trailers.
Yes.
So Arnie is now walking along the street.
Yep. Just a rural road.
Rural road. And you can tell his eyes are kind of fucked.
Yep. And he's just like covered in blood all down the front of his shirt.
You don't
and
see
his
it
hands.
Though yet.
Well, anyway, whatever.
I know, but it's a good shot though.
Yeah. You just see him from behind. But he gets approached by a police officer. When he finally turns around, you can see he's covered in blood, and he kind of looks down and realizes, oh, I think I hurt somebody.
Yeah.
And that's when you can see him kind of snapping out of it for the first time.
And so you can see his eyes change, too.
He goes back to, like, regular Arnie. And, yeah, so that is...
And he gets taken to jail, and now Ed and Lorraine are out now with him at the jail to try to help him. They're basically going to say that they are going to try to help him prove that he was possessed.
Yeah, but they actually... I like that they are... they realize that it's a hard thing to prove. So I like that in the movie, and I don't know how it went down in real life, but in the movie they're like, well, you're not possessed now. Like that was essentially Ed's problem with the whole thing was that he was like,
well, and they had the priest there as well.
They had a priest there. They were, you know, using holy water on him and getting him to touch the crucifix and all that kind of stuff. And they're like,
and he's got the zoomies.
Yeah. They were like, we don't think you're possessed now, so this is going to be a really tough thing to prove because what...
Well, and they were also trying to go off of their preconceived notions of possession. Like, if you're possessed and we didn't get rid of it, you'd still be possessed now. We would, you know, trigger it by all these things. And they actually even have the lawyer involved saying that's like, look, I don't buy it. It's only happened once before in the UK, and that guy didn't beat it.
Yeah.
And... what are we going to do? And they do make a kind of, you know, law and order type of remark. I think Ed makes that where it's like, you know, we swear to God on the Bible for court.
Yeah.
If you're admitting that God is in a court of law, you also have to agree that the devil is.
Yeah.
And
you're
like, well, okay, you're not entirely wrong.
I mean, you're not entirely wrong. It's interesting how that whole system is.
The whole legal system makes you swear on the Bible.
Yeah.
At least in the States it does.
Makes you swear on the Bible and, you know, and on money, it's in God we trust and all that kind of stuff. But then, you know, really, realistically, if you're saying, okay, well, this is a country that believes in God, well, then shouldn't that country also believe in the devil?
Because they're, you know, two sides of the same coin here.
Yeah, yeah. But that's not really how it works in a court of law. Yeah. So, there you go.
Well, so now the main thing that they're trying to do is they need to convince the lawyer first.
Mm-hmm.
So now this is where kind of the storylines start to deviate. There's kind of like a legal battle storyline with Ed and Lorraine, kind of. And then there's also some stuff with Arnie that kind of goes on. So Ed and Lorraine decide to look back and they say, okay, well, if it's not possession, we need to figure out what it is and we need to act quickly. So they start with all the evidence that they have.
Yeah.
They go back on all their tapes, and they know that this is going to be a big thing because if he's found guilty, they're going to push for death penalty.
Yeah.
Because they think that his excuse is so out of left field that they don't think that it's even really a possibility. So they're trying to think like, oh, they're just going for a last-ditch effort, a Hail Mary here.
Yeah.
So now we finally get a flashback. So now this is where we kind of like go back in time.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting a flashback of when the other Debbie's family moved into the home where all this exorcism crap took place.
Yep.
So you can see that like everyone's moving in, everyone's moving boxes. I'm pretty sure Arnie's there too, actually.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And everyone's kind of picking out new rooms. It's actually very similar to The Conjuring.
Yes.
Where, definitely. You know, the girl in The Conjuring, all the girls kind of pick their own rooms.
And stuff.
So everyone's already picked the room, and the kid, the original kid, the younger kid of Debbie's brother, has this box, and he goes to this one room. And again, this is another one they had in a lot of the teasers, is he picks a room that happens to have a waterbed. So he gets the room that has the waterbed, and you're like, oh man, you can tell it's the 70s.
Oh yeah.
Waterbeds are in.
Yeah.
And they do a lot of cool shots at the waterbed. So he kind of like lays on like most kids do, because it's a waterbed. It's cool as fuck.
Yeah.
And they have like this dead corpse head that kind of flips up, and you kind of get glimpses of it. It's really creepy.
It's really creepy. It's really good because you see enough that you know what they're alluding to, but you don't see a full shot.
Yeah. And the kid's kind of playing around. He thinks he's seeing things, and then you get the big jump scare of the hand coming through the actual waterbed. And it bursts and he's soaked, and you know.
It's good.
It's a good scare there. And then you realize you see that as Lorraine's vision. Because now we're actually still in the back, in the flashback, but you can tell that that's what Lorraine had saw while talking to the kid.
Right.
So you actually saw a flashback of a vision.
Mm-hmm.
They get a little kind of intertwined here.
Yeah.
I mean, I like it. They're trying to keep it interesting.
Yeah.
I don't think it's unnecessary. Like, it's still, for as complicated as it sounds to describe it, it actually makes a lot of sense when you're watching the movie.
No, it's shot well, actually. Yeah. I don't find it that complicated when you're watching it.
So, now we find out that the reason why Lorraine had this vision is because under the bed and the carpet, there was this pentagram occult symbols on the floor.
Yes. And so then this leads them to kind of investigating the house a little bit more.
And they found what they thought was water damage.
Yes.
So like, well, let's figure out if it's actually water damage.
Right.
And would you go into that cellar?
Oh my
underneath
God.
Underneath the house? Did you see all the cobwebs?
Jesus. Absolutely not. And I have to, okay, so would you go into that? As somebody who's not afraid of spiders?
I wouldn't love it.
That's a lot of That was a lot of spider webs.
If I could have, like, enough light underneath, it wouldn't bother me. Just to kind of see what's around me.
Yeah.
It's not my ideal situation.
That's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, if I had to. It's not one of those things where I'd be like, oh, yeah, just for fun.
Yeah.
I mean, if there was something leaking under the bed, I'd be like, oh, yeah, if the floors are water damaged and there's, like, a pipe leaking underneath, maybe.
Nah.
If I couldn't get it any other way.
I would just hire somebody to repair that.
Of course. So Lorraine decides that just on her own.
Well, Lorraine decides to go into the most cobweb-filled cellar area.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it's supposed to be like an old-timey, not old-timey, but like an old-style home that doesn't have
a
basement.
It's like a farm home, yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't have a basement. So it's one of those things where they have like a cellar that takes you down like slightly underground, and it's where all the concrete posts are on like the main floor of the what the home would be. But it's like, you know,
slightly,
I don't know, probably a few feet just below the actual main level floorboards. Yeah.
So under there, she finds a pretty interesting thing. She finds this, like, strange, I mean, it looks like a relic, right?
Well, yeah, it's in a bag. It's in, like, the satchel. It's, like, covered in crap. There's rats everywhere. Mm-hmm. Your mom would love it.
Oh, my God.
But then she finds out that in this bag, there looks like this weird, yeah, as you said, relic.
It looks like a relic.
Totem thing.
Also, call back to The Exorcist. I don't think I mentioned it to you when we were watching the movie, but it totally reminded me of that head that they find in The Exorcist.
You said it during the movie. I didn't write it down.
Yeah. You know when they're... I don't know if you... I know you haven't seen The Exorcist that many times. I have, so it's in there. But the part in the movie in The Exorcist where the priests are on that archaeological, like, dig. They're on, like, an excavation.
Yes.
They're in the desert, and they dig up this, like, old... stone, this little tiny, like, it fits in the palm of his hand, but it's like a little head, and it's a carving, a rock carving of, like, the devil. Anyway, it really reminded me of that. Again, it's not an exact copy. It's not like I'm not pissed about it, but it really did, like,
similar.
Yeah. It really made me think, like, oh, this is, again, kind of a nice little homage to, like, a very classic horror.
So now the Warrens, because they found this thing, they think that it was placed there on purpose and that someone has cursed the family.
Yes.
Or at least someone in the family.
And they're thinking that it might be related to somebody who's actually an occult, like, practicer. Right. So, okay. So far up to this point, I will say that I like that, because yeah, there's an aspect of the paranormal and the whole like demonic possession thing, but I also like that there's an aspect of some reality in that. There are people who actually do practice like
the occult, voodoo, all those subsections of it.
Yeah.
Right.
Like that actually.
Witches. Yeah. Witchcraft.
That is a thing. Like people actually do practice that. Mm-hmm. No, it's not as prevalent as any of your major religions, of course, but like it is practiced. So that's where I started to really like this movie, because I thought, okay, I feel like we're chasing like a real person here.
Well, and what I also like about the movie is the little tidbits of foreshadowing that you don't realize are foreshadowing.
Yes, yeah, they do a good job.
A good job of like having random bits of information that, even though we pointed out at the time, like this is one, for example, that's interesting, is so now they need to find this priest.
Yeah.
And they find this priest and they get invited to the basement of this guy's priest place.
Yeah.
This is one of those moments where I found that like it seemed odd and a little not out of place, but like interesting fact when it was happening.
Mm-hmm.
But then you don't realize that it's foreshadowing until it comes together at the end.
So what's so funny is that as that scene was unfolding, I remember thinking, this seems odd.
It seems odd that they would say that, and then the story just continued.
No, not even odd that they would say that. I actually got the impression that something bad was going to go down there.
Then, at that time?
Yeah.
I wasn't sure it was going to happen at that time, or if it was like, something's not going to fit in the way I think it is.
No, I was like pretty convinced. As soon as they like opened the door to Father Kastner, or whatever his name is, I was like, yeah, this guy's in on it. There was something about it where I was like, I don't like that basement he's got going on. It's too...
Yeah, it's too basement-y. So it's funny because...
It was too perfect, actually. That was my problem with it. Mm. Okay, so like when people just store stuff in their basement, it kind of looks like your storage area, right?
Yeah.
It looks like your dad's house or your mom's house, right? It looks like a basement where people store stuff. But when people have like... It was bordering on like shriney, and I was like, oh no, I don't like that. Why would you have a shrine?
So just to kind of back up a little bit, because I know we kind of sped through that. Essentially, after they find the totem, they try to contact a retired priest who worked on a bunch of similar...
Occult cases. Yeah.
And they contact this guy. They go visit him. And he's like, oh, this looks very familiar. I have one in my basement. I keep a lot of my old relics and things in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
Very similar to the Warrens.
Yes.
They actually kind of almost tip off to them. They even say right before they go down, he's like, well, I'd rather it be in here where it's safe and I know what's happening to it.
Than out there. And you can tell that eases Ed. Like, Ed's like, yeah, same. I get that.
And that's where Lorraine mentions, she's like, I don't, like, there's something off about the basement. I can't remember exactly what the line is.
Yeah, and she said, I don't want to go down
there. She's like, I don't want to go down here.
Yeah.
It's good. And then she eventually goes down, and they do it in a way that it could be framed in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's so much weird shit down there.
Yeah.
You can be like, maybe she doesn't go down there because there's a lot of negative energy. There's a lot of demonic things. Like, there's a lot of things that it could be that make her not want to go down.
And because they've set up Lorraine's character in all the past movies, that's why you get to be... They get to leave some mystery, right? Because they've set up her character in such a way in all of the past movies that you know that she's sensitive to these like demonic possessed things. So that's what you're thinking, or that's what they're probably hoping that you're thinking. But there was just something like extra creepy about that basement setup.
Yeah. Now they're talking about like the ceremony that was going on that was related to this.
Yeah.
And while this is happening, they're telling this, the priest guy's telling the ceremony thing to the Warrens.
Mm-hmm.
We now cut back to the prison where Arnie is just mopping floors.
Yes.
This is a good little, it doesn't really do much for the story, but it's a kind of a nice little scare moment.
Yeah.
He knocks over the bucket, kind of gets scared, stuff's moving on him. Things, he's now also seeing visions with other inmates.
Yeah.
So people are sitting up when they should be sleeping, or they're talking to him and they're not actually there.
Yeah.
And then we cut back, and now we find out that there was a similar case with the relic like this that was related to a case in Danvers, Massachusetts.
It's always Massachusetts.
Why is Massachusetts always got fucking witches?
Yeah.
They got all the crazy stuff.
Oh, yeah. They love it.
So the reason they did this is they... So this is the one thing that's interesting where I do like where the story's kind of grounded in reality.
Mm-hmm.
The Warrens did actually try to find real-life cases to try to track back what was going on. Like, they are using almost, like, real-world things to figure it out. It wasn't all entirely just, like...
Well, there was almost some, like, mild detective work there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they, because they knew that this thing was linked to it, they wanted to see if it was linked to anything else, and they found out that, again, this case in Danvers was related.
Mm-hmm.
So they go over there, and they try to work out this deal. I do kind of like this scene. I don't actually think this happened this way, but it is kind of like a nice, like, gotcha scene.
Yeah.
Essentially, the Warrens want to use the police to get their case files to see if there was anything similar or any relation to the Danvers case to what happened to Arnie. And the police want to use Lorraine for her psychic abilities to see if she can help them locate a dead body.
Yeah.
And they're both kind of, like, trying to make deals with each other.
Yeah.
And they come up with this, like, game.
Mm-hmm.
So the police officers actually are like, okay, one of these three knives was used in a murder.
Mm-hmm. This murder.
This case. If you can pick out which one, we'll give you the case files and we'll let you help us.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Lorraine being Lorraine's like, oh, it's this one.
It's this one, yeah. And so then the cop's like, okay, fine, the detective, sorry. He's like, okay, fine, I'll take you there. They kind of strike out, like, a rough deal, right?
Yeah.
And as they're driving there, I think the detective, like, intentionally misses the turnoff.
Yeah, that's a good one, where she's like, oh, the last site you saw, you searched for her was back there, was back exit, of a mile, yeah.
She's like, weren't you supposed to get off there? And he's like, mm-hmm. Yeah. And he's just kind of like, okay, fine. You've proved your point a little bit.
And now we cut back again to the prison. There's a lot of back and forth here.
A lot of back and forth.
And so Arnie is now chatting with the girlfriend and the girlfriend's brother.
Yep.
And they're just kind of talking about what's going on, how he's doing, what they think's going to happen, and kind of, like, filling him in on what's going on with the Warrens.
Mm-hmm.
Now we cut back, and we're having more Lorraine visions about the Danvers case. So essentially, again, the police want Lorraine to help locate the body of a missing girl that they know has been killed.
Yeah,
they think she's been killed.
Mm-hmm.
And they just can't find her body. So they take her back, but they found one other person's body, didn't
they? Well, they find her friend.
That's what it was.
And they suspect that she was also injured when the friend was killed, too. So that's why they're like, she was technically just a missing person, but they're still looking for her.
Yes, they found the friend that was killed.
Yes.
They couldn't find the... Yeah, that's what it was.
So I'll speed it up. It's a really good scene. I don't want to ruin it too much because I really find that... Yeah, you just gotta
They do a good job of really messing with your mind on what's happening, what's a vision, what's not real, what is real.
So, essentially, Lorraine gets, through her vision, she gets put into the vantage point of the killer. But then you realize that the killer is the girl who's missing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you also learn that this girl had been possessed / cursed. That was the whole thing.
A little fun fact here. The girl's name is Jessica. We learn about that later.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the same actress who plays the nun character. Not the nun character. Like, it played a character in the nun movie.
Yes.
The one that was actually helping her, helping the main character.
Yeah, like escape.
I can't remember the name of the character. But the one that was helping her escape in the big prayer room where you realize that they were all dead. And it was like her spirit that was helping her.
Yeah, yeah.
That was it.
Helper nun.
The helper nun.
Yeah.
Yeah. She actually is the same actress.
Yeah.
Fun fact, she's actually Romanian.
She's actually Romanian. Yes.
So now, again, another back and forth. Arnie is now freaking out in his cell. The girlfriend is calling and is concerned for him.
Yep.
We now learn that Arnie's been hearing voices, and the voices are telling him to kill himself.
Yep.
And now we're back to the Warrens, and they're trying to figure out a way that they can break this curse.
Mm-hmm.
And Arnie's just, like, freaking out. So... Now on this way to break the curse, the Warrens are now at the funeral home because they found the body of Jessica. Jessica, we don't want to leave how that happens.
Yeah.
But they do manage to find Jessica, who ended up killing the friend.
Mm-hmm.
And Lorraine's thinking that what we'll do is I can try to find a link.
Make a connection
with the dead body and see what I can see.
Yeah. Now, Ed doesn't love this option because he's like, I don't like this. Usually the person has to at least be alive or it's more of a spirit. He's like, I don't like the whole dead body thing. But he's trying. She's like,
they have no other link.
Yeah. She's like, I got to try something. So then they go to the morgue.
They just break into the morgue.
Yeah, they literally break into a morgue. And she makes this connection with the dead girl, Jessica. Yeah. It's a really freaky scene. So what did you think about it? Because it was, I thought it was really different for the Conjuring movies.
It was really different for the Conjuring movies. It gave me Autopsy of Jane Doe vibes.
Yeah, me too.
Which was interesting.
Autopsy of Jane Doe and it's going to come to me. Sorry, the series that everybody loved.
Hill House. Yeah.
It gave me real Hill House vibes.
Yeah, especially because of the whole funeral home thing.
Yeah,
right?
I thought it was really well done.
It was, yeah.
They're obviously taking note of what people are liking these days, like, and tweaking.
Yeah.
It wasn't typical Conjuring. I really love how this movie was not typical.
Yes.
Yeah.
I agree. And they did a lot of things that were different. Mm-hmm. So
there's a whole really awesome scene here with...
Oh, yeah, the guy, like, a dead body that comes alive, chases after Ed.
Basically, what I'll summarize it without getting... Because you could just get bogged down in all the details.
All the random details,
scene. But what is happening is that Lorraine makes a psychic connection with Jessica, the dead body, right?
Yeah.
And while she's doing that, she's being led through... In her visions, she's kind of in this dark... like, underground tunnel situation. Mm-hmm. You can hear a train off in the distance, but she doesn't really know. It's very damp. You can hear water dripping. This is all that you know, right? And then she gets up into this room, and there's, like, an altar. Like an occult. Insert your vision of, like, an occult altar here.
And you can see there's a person.
There's a person. Looks like a woman, but you can't fully tell.
Yep.
Looks like maybe a woman is practicing some type of...
ceremony or ritual.
Ceremony ritual thing here. Okay. Yeah. So then Lorraine is walking closer to this because she's like, I think this is the person who is cursing everybody. Like, this has got to be the person who's, like, responsible, right?
And there's, like, a whole aside that's happening to Ed at the same time because Lorraine's stuck in her vision.
And so while Lorraine is stuck in her vision... there's literally a different dead body that becomes possessed.
Well, and it's funny because Lorraine realizes it because she's like, oh man, the visions work both ways. And she's realized that someone else is seeing her, which means what she's seeing in this person's mind is what the other person's seeing in her mind.
It's really, really cool how you kind of piece the whole thing together. It's not confusing. It's hard for us to explain... like this.
There's a lot of stuff that's hard to explain, but actually makes a lot more sense when you're watching the movie.
Yeah,
there's
it's
a lot.
Good.
What I do like about the movie as a whole, even at this point,
mm-hmm.
is there's a lot of details that go on that you really can't describe to someone. I mean, you could.
Yeah.
But it almost takes away from the movie.
You have to just watch
it. You kind of just have to watch it.
So that's why we're giving our thoughts on these scenes. But unlike in other scenes where we really kind of go into the technical, what it looked like, what the makeup was like, and all that kind of stuff, we're leaving a little bit to be desired on this one.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it was really good. I like the scene. I thought this was
good.
I thought this was very different for the Conjuring universe. Like, I thought this was way elevated.
And again, similar to music, they have music when it's necessary, and songs when it's necessary, and score where it's necessary.
And silence where it's necessary.
A lot of silence. It's amazing how effective silence can be.
Yeah.
So now this thing chases after Ed, and he actually collapses because he had forgotten to take his heart meds with him.
Yeah.
For anyone that has undergone or known someone's undergone heart cardiac surgery, they're on a boatload of meds after.
Yes.
And he had forgotten to take some of his meds with him, so he was now having, like, chest pains and having a flare-up.
Yeah.
And they finally save him, and Lorraine kind of comes to, and we kind of fast forward to now the police have agreed to give the Warrens the case files to help them.
Yeah.
Because they gave their end of the bargain.
Yeah.
And you now realize that the only way to break this curse from all the info that's been given is they need to destroy the altar at where it was first performed.
Yes.
So you kind of know that there's the altar where this Lorraine had seen, you don't know this person.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, okay, we need to find this altar, we guess.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all you know right now. And oddly enough, you know what's kind of crazy? Is like, you're actually 3/4 of the way through the movie at this point,
and you still don't know
almost anything.
Yeah.
Did he do it? Did he not do it? Was he possessed? Is this a ritual? Yeah. What the fuck's happening?
I like that for once in the Conjuring universe, I'm not going, oh, it's that thing. You know, it was still really, you didn't immediately see what the connection was. And I liked that. Like it left you guessing a little bit.
Now, what did you think about this next scene with Ed waking up at home after he's collapsed?
Yeah, I liked it.
I thought that was a really kind of cool tribute to Oculus.
Yeah.
So this is I'm not going to spoil too much of it for you because it is a good scene.
It's love funny Oculus. Because I think Oculus is a fantastic movie.
The one thing I like about this is they didn't do it long enough where I caught on.
Yeah.
They did it just long enough where as I was figuring out, like, oh shit, no. And then you saw that it was. You're like, no. It almost, like, reaffirmed it instantly.
Mm-hmm.
So Ed wakes up at home after he's collapsed in the morgue.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see he's really spaced out and things aren't looking right in the room. And this thing starts chasing after him. Mm-hmm. And he freaks out and he grabs a knife.
Yeah.
And starts chasing after it.
Yeah.
And then you realize, as he's chasing after it, the scene changes and he's holding a knife to, like, Lorraine's head.
Yeah, it's Lorraine. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it. It definitely is a call to Oculus because, again, anybody who's seen Oculus, please, if you haven't seen Oculus, watch it. It's a fantastic movie. It's just mindfuckery because you don't know
what's true, what's not. So now this is the first piece of foreshadowing stuff where it's like you got a random bit of information that you thought was not important.
Yeah.
And now it becomes very important.
Yeah.
So you realize that now they're in their study, which is where, like, you know, the nun character was chasing the nun in previous movies.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a set of really dead gray flowers, gray ash flowers. Gray,
yeah.
And you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And even one of their assistants, like, they just came for you yesterday. And you remember in, like, an earlier scene that it's like, oh, there's a, like, delivery for Lorraine Warren. Like, okay, put it in the room.
Yeah, and you don't.
You thought it's just, like, a random.
You don't think anything of it.
Filler of, like, oh, they're just getting a flower delivery.
To show real life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, you find out that what has happened is the flowers are dead. And in the vase.
Is a relic.
Is the relic that was mm-hmm. found under the same head relic thing that they took earlier.
And you finally piece it together that now this occult person who's cursing everybody is trying to curse Ed and Lorraine Warren.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to do the exact same thing of, so here's what we finally see, the pattern that gets emerged. So whoever gets cursed first commits a murder and then commits suicide.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they all do. And the only one where it hadn't been fully completed was Arnie.
Yes.
Because he had been arrested. But so now that we kind of know what the curse is like a killing and then a suicide, then you're flashed back again into the jail and you can see that Arnie is trying to commit suicide. Something is possessing him to make him commit suicide.
He's after the almost calls, successful. Yeah, after the calls earlier, they made Ed and Lorraine Warren made some calls to the prison to actually get, like, a priest in, and they gave him a bottle of holy water.
Yeah.
And you find it now in one of these scenes. Again, it's a lot of jumping back and forth between like Arnie in the jail and the Warren is trying to help him and other things. And in one of the scenes where Arnie's in jail, he smashes the bottle and is like, you can see this person, the occult person, is like manipulating him to like try to kill himself.
It's really good.
Yeah.
So that's the whole thing.
And now we find out the previous case with Jessica, the other girl.
That's what happened to her.
She went to college in Fairfield and then took the totem. So they're actually trying to find the link between, like, Danvers and Fairfield, which is where Arnie lived.
And they were like, this place in Massachusetts is just, it's too far away. It's an outlier. Like, why target this random girl in Massachusetts? Well, turns out she wasn't random.
She had inadvertently taken the relic home with her. She's from Danvers and went to university or college in Fairfield.
Yes, so.
And so that's how that all ties together. So they're like, okay, so it is all related.
Mm-hmm.
So now Lorraine goes to see the father guy who knew about this ritual to see, like, okay, we know how it's all linked. We got all this info.
Yeah.
Where do we go? Where do we go with this now?
So Lorraine goes to Father Kastner. And I knew, I was like, oh, this is bad.
Yeah.
Like, she should not see this guy. Because then I got a bad impression from this. And, part of it was that you finally realize that his place is right along a stream.
And behind a railroad track.
And you're like, oh.
That's from her vision.
That's where she was. It was from her vision. So he invites her in. And yep. he's like, well, of course I'll help you. Of course. He brings her down into the basement. Creepy-ass basement once again. And he starts telling her this story about kind of his life.
And then meanwhile, Ed has kind of pieced it together. And he's like, yeah. oh no, this isn't good. I need to go
yeah.
find her.
Yeah.
So now Ed is now chasing after. So now we got three stories going on. We got Lorraine at the house. Ed trying to go after Lorraine. And Arnie trying to kill himself in some capacity in the jail.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
A lot of back and forth going on here. Well, this whole occult thing is kind of, like, you get random snippets of, like, the occult person kind of on and off.
But it's not, and yet it's not confusing.
Yeah.
Yet you have full understanding that this is all happening simultaneously.
Yeah. Yep. So now we're back on Lorraine, and we realize that the father guy is kind of prattling on about his daughter.
Well, he tells Lorraine this whole story about how he, while he was actually in the priesthood, he fell in love with a woman and fathered a child.
Yeah.
And he didn't want to give the child up, so he kept her, and I think he got out of the priesthood, essentially. He just raised her.
Yeah, just raised her, but then he also told about all the dangers, because, you know, my daughter got involved with all of this stuff.
And... Yeah, so then bit by bit, he's revealing that this daughter got involved into the occult.
Basically the occult.
Yeah, and you're like, oh, that's who it is. Like, yeah. That's where you have the full, you're like, oh, I got it now. So basically, the person who has been cursing everybody is Father Kastner's daughter.
Who has now been estranged and he assumed was missing.
Yes.
So now we cut back to the prison where shit's kind of really getting out of hand. Mm-hmm. Arnie's really struggling and he's with the girlfriend, Debbie, and the priest. And he's basically, like, full exorcist mode.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And the priest is just, like, he doesn't know what to do because he's never seen this before.
So then now what's kind of happened is Lorraine and the father kind of, not the father, the priest guy,
mm-hmm.
find out that the altar where this was performed was essentially in the basement, in somewhere, some
yeah,
capacity.
In, like, the tunnels beyond this guy's normal basement. So Lorraine says, you know, can you help me? Like, can you at least put me in the right direction? And he's like, yeah, of course. This is where I thought, oh, crap. Like, he's gonna trap her. It's not true. He wasn't an evil character.
Because now you hear someone coming in and you realize that it's...
The girl,
the occultist.
Yeah.
And so the father tries to be like, okay, I'm gonna stall you some time. This
mm-hmm.
is where it is.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the occult girl is just like, dink.
Yeah.
Kills her father.
He did.
He's super dead. So now Lorraine is finding the altar. She found mm-hmm. it. But of course, this slow-moving occultist is coming towards her.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like, you know, almost Walking Dead-esque. They're just all the zombies walking in slow motion towards her.
Yeah, exactly.
So I like the way it ties together. I just think it gets, again, a little blown out. Not as much as The Conjuring, though.
No, so this is the least cinematic ending of all of The Conjuring movies.
It's a little cinematic, but it's more grounded in reality than the other ones.
Way more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now we have Arnie's possessed. He's kind of going all exorcism-esque, mm-hmm. exorcist-esque. That was a lot of syllables.
Mm-hmm.
Lorraine is being chased by the occultist in the basement trying to destroy the altar.
Mm-hmm.
And Ed is on his way over to try to save Lorraine. Mm-hmm. All of this is kind of happening at the same time.
Yeah.
And so now we have the creepy person, the occultist, is basically pins Lorraine.
Mm-hmm.
And is trying to, like, stab her with a knife or something.
Yeah.
And there's, like, a moment there when the occultist actually looks like Arnie.
Yeah, yeah, it's really good.
It's kind
good.
Of a cool little twist there.
Mm-hmm.
And Ed makes his way in, finally catches up, but he's actually, like, blown with some type of dust or something, and mm-hmm. he's starting to freak out and have visions.
Yeah.
So he's starting to see things that aren't really there.
And he's got a sledgehammer with him.
Yep.
And Lorraine is kind of, like, crouched over by the altar.
Yes.
And you see Ed, like, charging towards her, and you're thinking, like, oh, shit, like, is he gonna... hurt Lorraine? Like, is he
yeah,
so
because you can see that
up?
His vision and
is
messed up.
But he actually manages to destroy the altar and not hurt Lorraine.
And
so
in the meantime, there's
everything.
Like a big levitation scene and contortion scene. It's really good.
Yeah, the contortion scene is so well done.
So there's a whole scene where, like, Arnie's kind of, like, you know, in the last phase of his
mm-hmm.
suicide, grandiose exorcism suicide. Yeah. And just as it's happening, Ed takes a giant swing, which what you think is at Lorraine.
Yeah, but...
But he ends up smashing
the altar table. He manages to overcome, like, the urges and everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And after this part, they kind of do a weird, like... Not like a weird scene, but they do kind of tie it up. Like, so the occultist is still there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they were told that the way to break the curse is to destroy the altar. So you can see that Arnie is, like, coming down. He's no longer levitating and contorting.
Oh, I like the...
You like the weird, quick snap ending there?
Yeah, I like the snap ending. It was good.
So Ed kind of looks at the occultist and is like, you promised the devil a soul.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't complete the ritual.
Mm-hmm.
It's now yours. And, like, this devil thing, like, stabs her in the face and, like, rips her off to hell.
Yeah, it's great. And she just sort of, like, and her body just sort of contorts and collapses there.
Yeah.
I thought it was really good because it was so quick.
It's quick. They didn't draw it out like the nun.
Yeah, you don't get a chance to linger on it and look at the makeup and the, you know, the CGI and the technology of it. So it's really... Yeah, like it's fake, but it's really believable in a movie the sense. Yeah. Yeah.
Now they have a cute little scene with Ed and Lorraine where at the end, Ed's having some chest pains again. They get out of the basement and he's like, I forgot my pills again.
And she's like, oh, it's okay.
She like has like the locket that they've seen in every movie and she opens it up and she keeps extra pills. She kept an extra pill there. It's kind of cute.
Yeah.
The movie focuses a bit more on like Ed and Lorraine's relationship and kind of how they worked together as opposed to like...
I mean, those two actors have phenomenal chemistry.
They do.
They really do. Like, can you not just picture those two actors in real life being together? I can.
Yeah. No, I could.
And... I know that that's what makes them good actors. They're not together. They're not a couple. But, like, they really do a good job. They do make it work really well.
Yeah. I also love the theme that they have. I'm going to put it in here for you guys. That they have, like, a theme that they use for, like, the ending of... Like, it's nice and it's... I think they call it, like, the Warrens theme.
Yes.
And it's a cool thing. I'll put it in here for you guys.
Mm-hmm.
Cutesy, it's really nice, it's very cinematic, orchestral, it's nice.
Yeah.
So now we kind of have the end of the cute movie, and then they kind of tie in the rest of the story.
Now we're kind of back at the trial, we see what happens.
So everything kind of gets resolved. Ed brings the goblet that was used in the ceremony back into their own home in their museum, and now we have Arnie's trial, and you get the inner titles, like they kind of come up, and you realize that Arnie was found not guilty on the case of murder, but they did find him guilty on manslaughter.
Yeah.
Now, the fun fact about this is Arnie...
In real life,
After serving his sentence, I think he was let out early after a few years. He was let out
super early. He only served like 5 years.
It was five years on like a 15-year sentence,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
And he is still with...
Debbie. Yeah, they got married eventually and they're still together.
He got married in prison.
Yeah. So... Really interesting story about the Glatzel family, because that's really who the family is about. And Arnie, of course, is married into the Glatzel family.
Sorry, before you launch on here, I just want to finish the last few scenes here because it involves the gazebo.
Oh, oh yeah, the gazebo. Sorry, nobody will know why we're finding that hilarious.
So at the very end, there's like a very cutesy thing with Ed and Lorraine. So you get the whole ending with the court case.
Yeah.
And as like a... like a nice kind of like, we've been on the road for so long, it's like a nice gift like, to
let's
Lorraine.
Go home.
Let's go home gift. Ed had built Lorraine a gazebo.
And that was that brought them back to their very, very early days of dating.
Yeah.
On their first official date. It
they
was
have a lot
raining.
Of, oh, and they have
no,
some yeah, but
on
they
their
have
first official
yeah.
date, it was raining and they like hid under a gazebo to stay dry and they kissed and
yeah.
blah blah blah.
And you actually get a lot of flashbacks of that part of their
yeah.
relationship too, which is nice.
It's super mushy, it's super cutesy. But why we're laughing so much is we're
if,
big
if any,
John Mulaney
yeah,
fans.
If anyone's a John Mulaney fan here, there's a in one of his Netflix specials.
We'll find it.
I think it's what's it called? Kid something.
Kid Gorgeous.
Kid Gorgeous, I think.
Yeah.
And in one of the things we'll put in the clip, but essentially it's like he makes fun of a gazebo in Connecticut that was erected in during the Civil War.
And he's like, I was in Connecticut doing
white people's
things. Yeah, and he's like, oh.
Ever walking through the park with your betrothed and it starts to rain, but you still want to hold hands? Well, may I introduce you to, and my condolences again to everyone, the gazebo!
And it's like, sorry for all of the exorcism and all the hauntings, but can I use the gazebo?
It's so perfect.
It
yeah.
was funny for us, but it's not really that funny.
No, it's not really. It's not meant to be funny. It's funny for us.
And I like how they tied up the end of the movie where they actually, in true Conjuring fashion, they actually gave you some original clips of the Warrens' tapes.
Yes. Yeah.
So you actually get some, the pictures that they use are from their own cases, and the audio and other video stuff that they use at the very end
mm-hmm.
is their original archives.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
Yeah, it's good.
So I like the little tie there. It's good. I think overall in
sorry,
terms of, yeah,
before,
go back to your storyline.
Sorry, before you finish wrapping up here, I have to mention really quickly.
Yes.
That the Glatzel family, that's the little kid who is the one who had the original exorcism performed on him. And then Debbie Glatzel, of course, who is married to Arnie, who is convicted of manslaughter, this mm-hmm. whole thing. So we have to mention that there was a lawsuit over the years between one of the Glatzel family members and Lorraine Warren, but it's actually not for what you think it might be. So this often gets used against the Warrens because people are always like, oh, see, the family is against them and they don't believe it's true. It's actually not true at all. So Debbie Glatzel and Arnie Johnson, I think is his name.
Cheyenne Johnson.
Yeah, Cheyenne Johnson. So they, and the little kid, Daniel, they fully assert that everything the Warrens have told about the story is exactly true.
Yeah.
They're like, nothing was embellished. This is exactly how it went down. But someone else in their family didn't like that the Warrens wrote a book first and they profited off of it.
Yeah.
That's what they didn't
that
like.
That was the lawsuit, was essentially saying that they had wrote a story that didn't involve them.
So much. It involved them only a little bit.
Yeah.
And that's what they didn't like about it. But unfortunately, they've lost this lawsuit several times because essentially, like, you can't stop somebody from writing a book about experiences when
that
they were present.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, you can't stop that from happening. There's a certain amount of things that if you write a book and you include people's names and stuff, you have to get their permission to talk about them in a story.
In a certain light.
Yeah, but not in all ways. Anyway, mm-hmm. so that's the only thing. And yeah, to this day, as in like, as this movie was coming out, Debbie and Arnie were both like, yep, that's how it went down. Like,
well, and I
crazy.
Think they also sued Warner Brothers too. There was another person that sued Warner Brothers for
it
a similar
them.
Thing. I don't
yeah.
think it was them, but there was another similar thing where they
yeah.
were portrayed in the movies and they weren't given credit.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, it's interesting.
But yeah. But overall for this movie, I think it's a good aside from the usual Conjuring
yeah.
universe.
I think it's way better than the other movies in
now,
the Conjuring universe, but different.
But different. It's a different type of story, and I think for the better, to be honest.
Yes, I do too.
I would argue it is...
It's still on par
with the original Conjuring for me.
Yeah.
I would say if... It depends on what you're interested in. For me, I like it better than 2, but I know other people out there prefer 2 mm-hmm. over the original.
I thought 2 was really scary from like a ghost story perspective.
I thought 2 was more ghost story than 1, but I
yeah.
found I lost interest in two quicker than one.
Because the ending was so over the top. It's so over the top.
Which is why I liked one, because I knew more about that story as well, and I thought they did a good job of capturing elements of it. Mm-hmm. Whereas three, I think they did a good job of incorporating everything. They made it not just about the horror, they made it about the Warrens, and they also didn't make it entirely like a fake supernatural story that didn't really happen that way.
Yeah,
it was everything that happened, like, you're like, yeah, it's a movie, but I can see that these events, similar to one, some of the original Conjuring, you're like, I understand this is a movie and this is not
exactly
verbatim how this happened.
No,
but you can look at it and be like, I can understand how someone could perceive these events and that this is someone's artistic interpretation of them.
I'm not saying it's exactly real, obvious, for obvious reasons. But what I am saying is that at least the premise is more grounded in reality than it ever has been. And because of that, that made it way scarier for me. It made it, like,
quite
freaky. It did,
and a lot more interesting, in my opinion, with the amount of storylines
that
going on.
Well, like I said, the part where, can I picture a random person getting caught up in their beliefs of the occult? Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I can even... Now, do I think that she managed to, like, get a devil involved and into the possession? I don't know about that, no. But, like, what I could see is somebody getting so wrapped up in the occult that they commit murders. Hello, Charles Manson.
Yeah.
That happens. Like, people do get so wrapped up in those beliefs that it...
Yeah, it can alter their behavior.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So that's what I found. That part of it was so realistic for me that I thought, that's
maybe
good. Yeah, yeah, it was well done.
And I thought there was nothing that was completely out of left field. Like, yes, the ending scenes were a little dramatic, and you were like, did it really happen that way?
A little dramatic,
but not,
though.
Like, I would say even less dramatic than the original Conjuring.
Yeah, I would say, too. Like, I really thought this was toned down and restrained for the Conjuring, which was what it needed. Now,
and
oddly enough,
they did kind of our personal favorite types of horror. Like, it used silence.
Yes.
It
didn't show you too much. Yep.
And it stuck with a more interesting storyline, not just jump scares to keep you interested.
Yeah, yeah, there was no jump scares. It was great. And right before I talk about our scores, I want to say that this one is getting the lowest critic scores for all the Conjuring movies. Well, not like The Nun or anything. That gets the lowest score. But right now, I think it's sitting...
It was sitting at like a 60 or 70, wasn't it?
No, hold on. Let me actually get the info for us. So let's just go to Rotten Tomatoes. So according to the critic score, it's a 57. However, the audience score is rating this as about an 84 right now.
Okay. So keeping that in mind, let's do our scores.
Okay, you go first.
So as you know, we do our score of 100. We're going to kind of do it similar to Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
I landed pretty high. I gave it an 85.
Yeah.
Very similar to the audience score.
Yeah. I literally landed on an 87. Like, I just notched it up just like a few points more. Just because I'm a real sucker for witch stories. I just think that
they're a little more interesting than just straight up paranormal.
Yes. I think the study of that is so much more fascinating. And so that's what really got me with this one. It had me, it hooked me. When I knew that it was all about witch and cursed stuff, I was like, okay, you got me, movie.
Yeah. I still go with 85, very strong, different. The only thing that got me was just the ending and the kind of more cinematic moments of it.
Yeah.
Just the more cinematic moments, right? Just
yeah.
not my thing, but I thought thriller-wise was great. Music is wonderful. I wish if we can, hopefully we can go to step two and do indoor theaters.
Yeah.
I do want to watch it in the theaters.
I would like to see it in the theater, too.
Especially if we can find a theater with Atmos.
We had to rent it at home, of course.
Well, at the time, we hadn't even gone to the framework yet. But
yeah.
Anyways, so that's our thoughts. Hopefully you guys get a chance to see this movie, and maybe if you like my nerding out, you can see it in Dolby Atmos.
Oh, my God.
It is a difference. I have gone to one Atmos theater in LA when I was there. But we are going to switch it up. We're done with the Conjuring universe.
We're done. We're done with the Conjuring universe. Hopefully you liked it. If you didn't, well, we're moving on.
Yeah,
so,
moving on. There you go. But we are sticking with some new movies.
Yeah, yeah.
We mentioned this in one of our Yas or Pass episodes.
Yeah.
It's a new movie that was actually recommended to us that came out, I think, this year or last year in 2020.
I think it was a 2020 release. Yeah.
And we're going to be looking at Saint Maud.
So we're gonna have a guest star for this one, like Matt said, and this is our friend Andy, who actually suggested this movie to us. He loves it. We're a little slightly less enthusiastic about it, but I still really like it. I'm not mad at this movie. I thought it was fantastic, and I will watch it again.
But yeah, you'll have to hear our thoughts on that in our next episode. And once again, thanks again for listening here at
Dark Room Reviews.